You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
And I'm Pooh.
Would you like to start us off tonight, Pooh?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Okay. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen, as promised, here are the new frequencies and the satellites, which we will be broadcasting on beginning Monday night, October the 31st. Three times each night on satellite, four times each night on three different frequencies. We will be heard at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. That's 7 p.m. Central Standard Time on satellite Galaxy 4. Channel 15, 7.55 megahertz. That's Galaxy 4, Channel 15, 7.55 megahertz. We will also be heard on WHRI at the same time, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, at 7.315 megahertz. That's 7.315 megahertz. Now, later that evening at 11 p.m. Central Standard Time, we will be heard on two satellites and three frequencies. Two satellites and three frequencies. That's at 11 p.m. Central Standard Time. We'll be heard on Galaxy 3, Channel 17, 5.8 audio, I believe it is, and also on Galaxy 4, Channel 15, 7.55 audio, and also on 7.64 audio. We will be heard on the Hawaii transmitter of WHRI. That's 9.930 megahertz, 7.315 megahertz. That's 7.315 megahertz. And on WWCR, 5.065 megahertz. That's 5.065 megahertz. So, ladies and gentlemen, make sure that on Monday night you tune to all of those different satellites and the shortwave frequencies. Pick the one that you like the best, and that's where you should be able to hear the Hour of the Time. We're going to talk about UFOs again tonight, the secret space program, and a few other wild and crazy things. So, folks, don't go away. I'll be right back. Last few nights on UFOs have really stirred up the loony bin, I can assure you. Got a letter from somebody named Lita, and a few other letters from people castigating me, saying that I chickened out. Saying that I'm not telling the truth when I say I don't know if extraterrestrials are real or not. And they cite passages from my book, which they have not read. They claim to have read it, but like most who read my book, they have not read it. So I'm going to read them the parts that they skipped. And I'm also going to tell you, despite everything that's written in this book, there is no proof for the existence of extraterrestrial life in the universe or on this earth or in our skies. There are letters written by people who cannot be found, people who wrote letters who can be found who will not comment on the letters. There is a letter written by an astronaut to the United Nations who now claims that he didn't write it. And all kinds of things, folks. Despite what you read in this book that makes you think that extraterrestrials might exist, none of it is proof. Not one single bit of it. And that's the problem with this UFO subject. There is no proof. And when people read my book, they don't read what I wrote. They read what they want to hear. They read what tends to verify what they already believe or what they wish to believe. So, in my book, on page 196, at the beginning of the chapter concerning UFOs entitled The Secret Government, under the paragraph headed Perspective, let me read to you what you obviously did not read. And remember, this book has been in print for a whole bunch of years. Many sources of information were used to research this chapter. I originally wrote this piece as a research paper. It was first delivered at the MUFON Symposium on July 2, 1989, in Las Vegas, Nevada. Most of this knowledge comes directly from, or is a result of my own research into the top secret magic, spelled M-A-J-I-C, material, which I saw and read between the years 1970 and 1973 as a member of the intelligence briefing team of the Commander-in-Chief of the Pacific Fleet. Since some of this information was derived from sources that I cannot divulge for obvious reasons, and from published sources which I cannot vouch for, this chapter must be termed a hypothesis. A hypothesis. Now, I want all you loony bin people to go look that word up and make sure you understand what it means. I continue. I firmly believe that if aliens are real, this is the true nature of the beast. It is the only scenario that has been able to bind all the diverse elements. It is the only scenario that answers all the questions and places the various fundamental mysteries in an arena that makes sense. It is the only explanation which shows the chronology of events and demonstrates that the chronologies, when assembled, match perfectly. The bulk of this I believe to be true if the material that I viewed in the Navy is authentic. As for the rest, I do not know, and that is why this paper must be termed a hypothesis. I have since come to believe that the material that I viewed in the Navy is not correct, but in fact was a deception. And I base that upon an awful lot of evidence that you can count as proof. Now also, on page 234 of my book, I make it very clear what I believe. Very clear. In conclusion, number 5, at the end of this chapter, on page 234, I say, and I quote, "There is always the possibility that I was used, that the whole alien scenario is the greatest hoax in history, designed to create an alien enemy from outer space in order to expedite the formation of a one-world government. I have found evidence that this could be true. I have included that evidence in the appendix. I advise you to consider this scenario as being probable." End quote. Now, I can't make it any clearer to you little loony cuckoos out there who want to run around and quote my book as proof that extraterrestrial life exists and is visiting this planet. You're off your rocker. You haven't read my book, and you're doing yourself, me, and everyone else an injustice when you do that. Just recently, there was an article in the Village Voice in New York City which makes the same claims. Whoever wrote the article claims that he researched me, researched my book and material that I do, and he has not. He is a liar. He's done no research at all. He claims that I say that extraterrestrials are real and that they're in an agreement with the United States government and that they're mutilating animals and human beings and all of this kind of stuff. And I've never said that I ever even saw anything that said human beings were mutilated. So, folks, I just wanted to get that out of the way so that we can dispense with those wacko, ridiculous idiots out there who claim that they read my book and did not read it, in fact, at all. They went through it and picked out what they wanted to believe and read it. And then they quote me as being proof of the existence of extraterrestrials, and it's not true. I don't know if extraterrestrials exist in the universe or here. Due to the vastness of the universe, I would never make any kind of a claim that they do not exist. I do know this. If they do exist, they're not bothering us. And if they are visiting this earth, they are not a threat to the national security, just as the government says. And they're not running around mutilating cattle. They're not killing human beings. They're not the ones manipulating us into a one-world government. But instead, if they exist, and if they are visiting this earth, they're being used to propel us into a one-world government. But I don't even think that's the case. I believe that what's flying in our skies is of human origin. And I can present a pretty good case for that. A case that's very hard to refute. However, no one on the face of this earth can present a case for the existence of extraterrestrial life, much less their visitation to this earth. All the so-called proof that these people talk about is nothing but innuendo, unsubstantiated claims, a total 100% complete lack of any kind of physical evidence whatsoever. In fact, several people have offered as much as $1 million to anyone on this earth who could come forward with proof of extraterrestrial life. No one, not one person on the face of this globe, and all of these wacko UFO people know about these rewards that have been offered. Not one single person has stepped up to present 1 ounce of proof. And the reason they don't, ladies and gentlemen, is because there is none. Because if there was some proof, in the extensive amount of research that I have done, I would have come across it. And that $1 million would be in my pocket at this very instant. So much for the woo-woo crowd. You people out there had better start dealing with facts and reality in your life. Nobody's going to come here and save you from yourself. No one's going to come here and save us from ourselves. We don't need an external threat to this earth to come together in this world. All we need do is grow up. We don't need lies and deception and manipulation. If you have any brains, you might understand that. No one is going to be raptured. Jesus is not going to come and save us, because everyone around the world is claiming that he's going to be here imminently. It flies in the face of their own religion. The Bible that I have read and learned so well says that that cannot be. First, the temple must be rebuilt. It cannot even begin to be rebuilt for many years yet. And it will take many years to rebuild it. And then certain things have to happen after that before Jesus can ever begin to come back, if you believe that what you're reading in the Bible is true. Look around at this earth. Somebody called the other night and said the extraterrestrials are here to help us. Help us? Where are they helping us? He doesn't even know if they exist, and already he's got them helping us. Where? Show me. Show me where extraterrestrials have fed starving populations on this earth, or stopped a war, or prevented an innocent man from going to the electric chair. You're living in delusion. And it is of your own making because you are sheep. You are begging to be sheared, and you will be sheared until you stop this insanity. And then you will be led to the slaughter. A nation or world of people who will not use their intelligence are no better than animals who do not have intelligence. Such people are beasts of burden and stakes on the table by choice and consent. And if you are that stupid, the smart and cunning, powerful men of this world consider you their legal and lawful prey. Exactly. As a hunter lies in wait for a rabbit, they lie in wait for you. Amazing. I never cease to be amazed by the stupidity of the average man and woman in this country. A country where there should not be any such thing at all. Out of all the subjects that I've discussed on this radio broadcast, I've never gotten such a huge response as I have in the last couple of days, which tells me that more people are more concerned about UFOs and extraterrestrials than they are about their country, their constitution, or their personal liberties, which makes me believe that what you're going to get as a result of it is exactly what you deserve. And don't write me any letters saying that I should be kinder to my audience. When my audience shows me that they have some brains, I will be happy to be kinder to them. But you see, I've learned something in my own life, my early life, my life of stupidity, when I wouldn't listen to anyone. And when no one gave me the expectations that I needed to be able to excel and use my brain and become a real thinking human being, I learned that people will live up to what they're expected to live up to. So if I'm nice to you and tell you that everything is hunky-dory and just wonderful, you're going to be stupid forever. I will not stand for it. Because I don't want to lose my liberties. I don't want to lose the Constitution and Bill of Rights. I don't want to lose this great nation. So I'm not going to pretend that everything is okay, because it's not. I'm not going to pretend that your great wizard's sitting out there full of knowledge and wisdom. I'm going to tell it like it is. Some of you are smart. Some of you are real patriots. Some of you understand what is going on. And some of you are fighting the good fight. The rest of you are stupid. Sheeple. You will be sheared. You will be led to the slaughter, because the few of us that are awake cannot save you. Our numbers are not great enough. And if that doesn't impress you, I don't know what will. In 1946, ladies and gentlemen, there was a project called Project RAND. Project RAND was staffed by a consultant group managed by Douglas Aircraft Company. Their report was entitled Preliminary Design of an Experimental World Circling Spaceship, 1946. Included in the report were a consideration of the technical feasibility, the political and psychological effects of it as a weapon, its use as a surveillance and communication device, and, of course, a demonstration of United States technological superiority. Now, since the Germans had already thought of it, the Rand Report and the Russian plan to put satellites in orbit can never be considered original. We weren't first. The Germans were working on this stuff long, long ago. In actuality, the United States and Russia merely extended the German plans, all in the interest of military supremacy. In 1946, the Navy and Army Air Force conducted independent missile studies, and a second Project Rand study was published in 1947. And it gave more detailed specifications for a three-stage rocket to put satellites into orbit. Now, you think this is crazy? That early? You never dreamed that they were doing these things that early. Did you? Well, the first public announcement of the satellite program was included in the report of the Secretary of Defense in 1948. In the History of Rocket Technology, written in 1964, Mr. Cargill Hall states this, quote, Forrestal, that's James Forrestal, Forrestal's early veiled announcement of the United States satellite program caused a great deal of consternation among those working on the satellite project in the United States in 1949 and who were trying to preserve its aspect of secrecy. After this occurrence, no official reference in open literature was made to an American satellite effort until November of 1954. Wake up. In a book entitled Envoys of Mankind, and I think I'm the only one who ever discovered this book and read it, because it's about law. You see, I knew if there was a hidden space program, something that was not known by the American people, it must be somewhere covered in the law. It had to be. So I went looking in law books, and books about law, and books written by people concerned with law, and specifically I looked for some evidence of law governing space, and I found it. I found two men, George S. Robinson and Harold M. White, Jr., who actually held the first titles of legal specialists in space law. They wrote this book called Envoys of Mankind, which is a declaration of first principles for the governance of space societies. That grab you? The prologue, interestingly enough, is written by Gene Roddenberry. You all know who he is, don't you? Well, let me read to you directly out of this book verbatim. I will add nothing, I will subtract nothing, beginning with the second paragraph on page 45. And I quote, "The new NASA was actually to choose the first astronauts of the Western world, those destined to be among the world's first legally designated envoys of mankind." Now note what they say here, and remember these are lawyers talking. Destined to be among the world's first legally designated envoys of mankind, which indicates there was someone who were performing this function illegally. NASA was to carry out a feat that through the millennia had inflamed the imagination of humankind, to break the surly bonds of Earth. NASA thus had a decisive voice in determining just how and by whom those surly bonds would be broken, and in some sense NASA would become the arbiter of Olympus. Yet despite its shiny new title, it was the legatee and recipient of many old traits and trends. First, and perhaps most hopeful, was President Eisenhower's unbending insistence that the space effort have a rigorously civilian character with a primary emphasis on original research, development, and exploration. This was clearly reflected in the 1958 National Aeronautics and Space Act. This act, the new NASA charter, made dissemination of information a duty of the agency, and despite a grant of considerable authority, the purview of the agency was specifically limited to those developments necessary for research and exploration. To insulate the program from what Eisenhower feared would be perceptions of involvement with the military-industrial complex, the Space Act, in its declaration of policy, specified that NASA was to be responsible primarily for research and development associated with aeronautical and space activities, except for those activities peculiar to or primarily associated with defense. It was also required that the administrator of NASA be a civilian. In several respects, the United States took a courageous step in July 1958 when President Eisenhower signed the Space Act, which charged the space agency of the United States government to lead a strictly civilian, peaceful exploration of space for the benefit of all mankind. These were not the words of parochial nationalism and socio-biological territoriality. They were not the words of conquest. They were precisely the words that would turn up almost 10 years later in the unique Outer Space Treaty of 1967, sometimes affectionately referred to by practitioners of space law as the Mother Treaty, which means there are many other treaties. A mother has children. The United States Space Act seemed to strike an unorthodox and elevated philosophical and political posture usually witnessed only in extraordinary times. NASA's entire legal and organizational environment was formulated to cultivate a broad spectrum of constituencies for its programs, even if those constituencies were comparatively small. NASA was deliberately connected to other important constituencies outside the president's office and cabinet. Integrated high-level consideration of space policy and an institutional memory, moreover, were assured by the creation, in the Space Act, of a broadly based National Aeronautics and Space Council in the Executive Office of the President. Still, the old dual military-civilian program remained, and you don't hear anything about that. Significant early acquisitions of NASA included the Vanguard program of the Navy, the Lunar Probe project of the Air Force, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory of California Institute of Technology, and the five Army satellite projects at the prestigious Army Ballistic Missile Agency at Huntsville, Alabama. The continuing nature of this military-industrial-civilian symbiosis, despite the organizational philosophy, an extraterritorial nature of the new NASA was once again apparent in the actions and words of President Eisenhower, although he insisted in a news conference on 4 November 1959 that non-military space exploration was a sort of doctrine in America. He had laid the groundwork in 1958 for the new second version of the dual space program. 6 months before the creation of NASA, in February 1958, the Congress had passed the administration's bill creating the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, which had its own director of space. The next month, pending the formation of NASA, the president gave his approval to the plans advanced by DARPA, making it, in a real sense, the first United States space agency. When NASA was finally formed, the accompanying Space Council was directed to provide a civilian-military liaison committee composed of an equal number of representatives from the military department and NASA, which meant that the military predominated over civilians on the committee 3-1. Also, despite the requirement that the administrator of NASA be a civilian, the Space Act did not require NASA to be managed by civilians in the ranks. NASA was heavily staffed at high levels with retired or borrowed military personnel. In the May 1958 congressional hearings on the Space Act, DARPA Administrator Roy Johnson stated the Eisenhower administration's approved position on the proposed space legislation, and his testimony included this statement, quote, "The legislation setting up a civilian group should not be so worded that it may be construed to mean that the military uses of space are to be limited by a civilian agency. For example, if Department of Defense decides that it is militarily desirable to program for putting man into space, it should not have to justify this activity to this civilian agency. The NASA Authorization Act should be amended to provide that insofar as such space activities may be peculiar to, are primarily associated with, weapons systems or military operations, in the case of which activity the Department of Defense will be responsible." So it is interesting to note that even the limitation of NASA by its charter purely to be peaceful, non-military activities was not motivated strictly by altruism. It was as much to keep NASA. One more time to you so that you will understand truly what I'm telling you. Even the limitation of NASA by its charter purely to peaceful, non-military activities was not motivated strictly by altruism. It was as much to keep NASA out of the military's business as it was to keep the military out of NASA's business. The fact that peaceful research and development by NASA also fulfilled non-hostile military needs simply made it easier for the civilian effort in space to be undertaken hand in glove with the military, and for the military to conduct space exploration in secret. The Space Act made the intent of the relationship quite clear when it indicated that a primary objective in establishing NASA was to achieve, quote, "the most effective utilization of the scientific and engineering resources of the United States with close cooperation among all interested agencies in order to avoid unnecessary duplication of effort, facilities, and equipment," end quote. Still, though, the intent may not really have been to accomplish a full division of efforts. A striking degree of division remained. It was undeniable that an open civilian program was created for the exploration and exploitation of space on an internationally cooperative basis for the benefit of all mankind, with accompanying man-in-space publicity hype and space extravaganzas that convinced most of the United States population, as well as most of the world, that it was the only United States program. It was not. There was also a secret commitment to a secret space program, the highest priority having been given to space research with a military application, and there was significant military involvement and interest in the new civilian space program as well. Ladies and gentlemen, this voyage into the outer regions of the universe has been provided free of charge, and your tickets were furnished by Swiss America Trading. Now, when we reach our destination, I will assure you that the exchange booth will be open. For the people that we are going to visit are not as stupid as we are, and they will only deal in gold or silver coins. So I urge you to avoid the rush to the money change booth before we dock in the satellite orbiting our destination. The booth is open now, and for your convenience, we have runners who will be happy to come to your seat and conduct the business with you right there. Pick up your phones on your technologically correct space seats and dial 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. This is a fun planet, and you don't want to miss anything because you don't have any money in your pockets. 1-800-289-2646. One of our beautiful runners, male or female, depending upon your own personal choice, will be with you post haste. Ladies and gentlemen, how many of you have sat down and just looked over the names of the space shuttles? Anybody out there? How many of you read Mr. Bacon's book called The New Atlantis? Anybody? Well, Mr. Jeffrey Vitala did, and I have, several other people that I know have, and it's incredible how they throw their ridicule in our face. You see, we have six space shuttles, or we used to have six space shuttles: Columbia, Enterprise, Endeavour, Discovery, and Atlantis, and of course the Challenger. Columbia is also the name of Washington, D.C., the district of the occultists who have infiltrated our government. The Enterprise is one of the names of the plan to bring about one world government, as I have indicated to you over and over. Endeavor is the great undertaking of the Enterprise. Discovery is actually the rediscovery of the great empire, as was written by Manly P. Hall. And Atlantis is the name of the philosophical empire that will arise out of the ashes of the United States of America. Do I have your attention? Using the names of the space shuttles unlocks an esoteric message. That is, Columbia and a great enterprise will endeavor to discover Atlantis. The Challenger, or the people who would stand up against the New World Order, was destroyed. Was destroyed with a school teacher on board representing the sheeple of the nation, while the nation and the children of the nation watched. Like the Kennedy assassination, it took a lot of wind out of our sails. And, of course, there were no more proposals to put civilians into space. After all, they might see something they shouldn't see. And now, I want you to read a book called Cloak and Gown. Cloak and Gown, Scholars in the Secret War, 1939 to 1961, by Robin W. Winks. Cloak and Gown, subtitle, Scholars in the Secret War, 1939 to 1961. Under that is an open book with Hebrew letters with top secrets laid across it. Under that, Lux et Veritas. The book was written by Robin W. Winks and published by William Morrow and Company, Incorporated, New York, copyright 1987. You say that there could be no collaboration between the universities, the scientific community, and the military? You are wrong. This is a thick book. It documents it all from its inception. It documents the life of James Jesus Angleton and many others. It documents where they came from, what their philosophy was, and even in some places indicates the secret societies that they belonged to. And these men ran the OSS, the Central Intelligence Agency, the National Insecurity Agency, and much more. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Nick in Houston.
Hello, Nick. What can I do for you?
Staying on the subject about the space traveling and Challenger and all this the space shuttles, if you notice, when they have a news conference from the space, there are six astronauts sitting in, three on top, three on the bottom.
Yes.
Look at the color of the shirts they have.
Mm-hmm.
Red, blue, red, blue, red, blue. And draw some lines and you're going to find a compass and a square.
That's correct. Not only that, if you go into the front door of the Supreme Council of the 33rd Degree in Washington, D.C., you will see that all of the astronauts have been Freemasons, and you'll see a photograph of one very famous astronaut standing upon what is purported to be the moon, holding a Masonic apron in front of his spacesuit.
That's correct. Very good show, Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night, Nick. The number is 602-337-24. Call if you dare, and you better have something to say. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Cooper.
Yes.
How are you doing? You're a very, very brilliant man. I'll tell you that.
I have the same brain that everybody else in the nation has.
Yeah, you just use yours to...
I've learned to use it. I didn't use it for much of my life, but now I do. Thank God.
There was one thing you discussed yesterday, let me see. ELF?
Yes.
What is that?
Extra low frequency.
And what is it supposed to do?
Well, different transmissions of extra low frequency radio waves, or waves of the electromagnetic spectrum, let's say, to be more exact, at different frequencies, can produce different mood swings in a population that has been targeted to receive this transmission. Can range from euphoria all the way down to the depths of the deepest depression.
Holy smokes. Is there anything that we can do to prevent this from happening? Or?
Well, if you can identify an ELF tower that you can prove is being directed toward the population, then according to the law of self-defense, you are justified in chopping it down and chopping it up into little pieces. If, in fact, you are under attack, the law provides for you to defend yourself. But you must prove that you are under attack, and that's not easily done.
I see.
Anything else I can do for you?
No, it's just been a pleasure to talk to you. I've been trying to get to you for about 8 months since I got a shortwave radio and I heard you on. And I live here in Taunton, Massachusetts. Have you heard it?
Nope.
Oh, well, I used to call the local Taunton talk show, and I used to tell these people about this new world order coming, and they all thought I was nuts.
Well, they will end up being the ones who are nuts, and they will turn to those of us who know for some kind of sustenance and protection when all this happens. And
exactly.
If they're not prepared and they're not willing to help us, we won't be able to give it to them, unfortunately.
And Mr. Clinton, Slick Willie, he's involved in this, huh? All the way, right?
If he wasn't, he wouldn't be where he's at.
Exactly.
Thank you for calling.
Okay, Mr. Cooper, I'll see you.
Good night. 602-337-2524 is the number. Good evening, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Cooper. Charlie calling from Scranton, Pennsylvania. How you doing?
Good.
Okay. Interesting topic here. I have in my possession here a aircraft model kit called the Flying Disc from Area S4 outside of Papoose Lake next to your Area 51.
It's based upon a bullshit story by a phony named Bob Lazar.
Absolutely. And here's the model kit for the Sheeple.
Yeah, it's a total fraud.
Total fraud, and absolutely. And you know what's horrendous about this?
What's that?
On the wrapping of each model piece is made in USA.
Of course.
So this is something here for the Sheeple, and it comes complete with little aliens, too.
Yes.
So they can color them the suit.
Bob Lazar was never a physicist, never graduated from MIT,
right.
Never worked as a physicist at Los Alamos, the National Laboratory. He is a complete 100% total fraud.
Absolutely correct. I found that out a few years ago through conversations with other people.
Yes.
Okay, you have a great show, Bill. It's a pleasure listening to you.
Thank you.
And we'll let you get on to another caller. Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
All right, bye-bye.
602-337-2524 is the number. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just don't think that you understand Jesus' teachings too well.
Good night, loony bin. There's another loony bin out there. You don't understand freedom too well. You don't understand this country. You don't understand the Constitution. And you do not at all understand the consequences of your intolerance of other people's freedom as long as they don't hurt you, dummy. It is people like you who are destroying this world. Leave people alone. Practice your religion. Believe whatever you want. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, Bill, how you doing?
Good.
Listen, I just wanted to change the subject a little bit. And let me turn my radio down. Infrared. How do you defeat infrared? Is it true?
That's not the subject. I can't believe this. One guy wants to talk about my understanding of Jesus, and the other guy wants to talk about infrared on a night that we're talking about a secret space program. Good evening, you're on the air.
Billy Cooper?
Yes.
A neighbor from Yuma, Arizona.
How you doing?
My name's Joaquin. Hey, just a theory. Are we on the air right now?
Yes, you are.
Okay. The theory was, you know, all these movies are coming out, media putting out E.T., Close Encounters of the whatever kind.
I got news for you. That started back in the early 50s.
Right. You know, everybody's got a fantasy about the macabre or whatever. And they're shoving this down our throat that this is going to happen. I know your belief on the coming of Jesus Christ.
No, you don't. Nobody does.
Well?
I put out over this air facts, things that we can prove. My religious beliefs are my own. It's none of your business. Yours is none of my business.
Right. I do believe that it is going to happen. There will be a rapture, but I do believe that we are going to suffer. We are going to be persecuted. We will be beheaded, as the Word of God says.
Well, I'm sorry, but the topic tonight is the secret space program, and I wish all you religious fanatics would stay home. This country was founded on a basis of individual freedom. Our forefathers set up this country, you poor deluded people, not as a Christian nation, but as a secular nation protecting the rights of all people to practice whatever religion they want so that Christians could practice their religion without being persecuted, because that's the way governments were run in Europe. There was a state religion in every country, and if you didn't belong to it, you were persecuted. You think you know something about Jesus Christ? You don't know anything. You are taking his words and twisting them And by twisting them, you're helping to destroy this country, which gives you the freedom to believe in what you want to believe in and everybody else. And I am at the point now where I don't think that you're ever going to learn anything different until somebody comes along and does chop your head off and put you through a meat grinder and feed you to the lions. Maybe that's what you secretly want. And if you secretly want it, you'll cause it to come about. Now, if you don't like this broadcast, turn off your radio and go to bed. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, Bill, I love your broadcast. Keep it up.
Thank you.
This is Bob in South Carolina. Bill, I want to ask you, have you ever messed around with ELF at all? Did you get a chance to play with it while you were in the military?
No, I didn't. The closest I ever came was the jamming technology.
Is ELF, is it measurable? Like, can you...
Oh, yes. Any transmission can be measured.
So you could detect that on, say, a spectrum analyzer?
I don't know if it's a spectrum analyzer. You'd have to talk to somebody who's an expert in electronics, as I have before, and they've told me that, yes, you can detect it and measure its strength. And you can, just like a radio direction finder, triangulate and find out where the transmitter is.
Do you have any idea what the frequency range is of these signals?
We have it in our research here. In fact, there's a paper in the back of my book that talks a little bit about it in the appendix. But I don't have it right in front of me now.
Bill, do you think if enough patriots came together that we could actually go over to that Area 51 there and overtake them people and find out what they're doing?
You don't want to do that. You break the law.
Well,
you can't break the law. You don't understand. I don't know how many of you people understand how the enemy works. Throughout history, they have created situations that promotes a conflict, which they're doing now. If you rise up against any part of the government, it will justify their declaration that you are traitors and that you are terrorists. And they will then have the politically correct consensus among the public that they can kill you at will, and they will.
Well, you know as well as I do that the laws that the governments are putting on us aren't just.
Well, it doesn't make any difference. Look what they did in Cuba. What happened? We helped install a communist dictator. And then that communist dictator was threatened by a great patriotic movement of Cubans who wanted to be free. They left Cuba by the tens of thousands and came to the United States. They trained to go back and take that country. In Cuba, there were agents operating against Castro and sabotaging his regime. What did Castro do? He connived with the traitors in the United States government to foment a rebellion called the Bay of Pigs. The Bay of Pigs was to train Cubans in the United States to attack Cuba with old obsolete weapons, with insufficient supplies. The Cuban agents on Cuba, who were to arrange for the patriots to rise up in support of this invasion, were given radios that did not work, and so they could not be communicated with to call off the uprising. All of this was coordinated between the traitors in this government and Castro. And what was the purpose? So that the patriots would rise up and could be crushed by Castro and would not have the force needed to win. They were betrayed on the beach, they were betrayed in Washington, and they were betrayed in Cuba. And that's exactly what they're trying to do to the patriot community in this country today. And you had better not fall for it. If they come against us and commit atrocities and start going door to door, dragging people out and carrying them away, or taking arms out of people's homes by house-to-house searches, or rounding up patriot leaders, then we will be justified in doing whatever necessary to reinstate the Constitution of the United States of America as the supreme law of the land, rounding up the traitors, imprisoning them, trying them under the law, and if found guilty, hanging them by the neck until dead. But unless we do it legally in that manner, we will be the ones swinging from the gallows.
Well, Bill, do you think there is any possibility we will ever find out, either by their own admission or through legal or illegal methods, of what they're really up to and what they're doing with all these secret projects?
We know what they're doing.
Well, we do, but I mean, to actually admit it to the general public.
If you were accused of murder, would you go into court and admit it?
Well, if I didn't do it, of course not.
Whether you did it or not, you're not going to admit it, are you?
Well, if I murdered somebody and I knew I did it, I suppose I probably would. I don't know.
Well, you're a very unusual person. I can tell you from experience and from the knowledge of these people and how they think, they will never admit anything, ever.
Well, Bill, anyways, that's all I had to ask you about.
Well, it was a good question, and I'm glad you asked it because I got a chance to tell something that I've been wanting to tell people for a long time anyway.
All right, Bill. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. Thank you for calling. Got time for maybe one more quick call, folks. 602-337-2524 is the number. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, Bill. You confirmed something in my mind, at least I've been thinking about for some time now, that the powers that be are building a space station so that they can go up there when the time comes, the Holocaust down here, so they can escape it until the time that things settle and they can come back down and rule the world.
Well, they don't have to go up there. They've got underground cities built all across this country, and that's not fantasy. I didn't make it up. It's well documented under a place called Mount Weather in Virginia. They have a complete government in waiting. And they will all, they have, certain people have special passes in a national emergency where they feel threatened. They'll disappear underground. They'll button up those sites, their hard sites. An atom bomb won't crack it. And they'll just wait until everybody up here quits killing themselves, and then they'll come back up. If we're smart, we won't kill each other. We will maintain order and social control, as I've been telling the militia to do all along. Maintain military and political control and obey the law in your local areas. And don't attack anybody unless you're attacked first.
Be prepared.
That's right.
What are the main purposes for these space programs, though?
Well, you got to ask them. I don't really know what they're doing out there. We know they're out there, but we don't know what they're doing.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for calling. Well, folks, it's that time once again. I wish I could say it's been nice. I guess the last half of the program has been nice. Good night, and God bless you all. Thank you.